Good afternoon, good evening, and good morning, wherever you are tuning into this podcast from. This is John Sarnay here from a rainy, cold, freezing Cape Town, recording our week's podcast. Always excited to be doing this. Always have a great time with my co-host Eric on the other side of this call. Eric, how are you doing there, brother?
Hey, brother. Good, good. The cold front hasn't reached us yet, so it's been a mildly cool day, but otherwise okay. All good. Yeah, no. I'm really looking forward to just constantly hot weather. I haven't been training, so like I haven't done the whole, your summer body is made in the winter kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I'm still looking forward to it. That's your bit.
Yeah.
Have you been training in the winter? Have you been good at it?
Well, look, I mean, I every time I see a gap, I take it and I go for a cycle or for a run. And twice so far, I've been caught proper in the run, in the rain. Because that's what Cape Town is, it's around every corner. There's a cloud stuck in some mountain range, which is now pouring rain. So, I mean, it's all part of the adventure. But I think, winter is good to hibernate in. I mean, I think if you look at what nature does in winter, I'm not even joking, but I think if you think about what's happening in nature, it's chilling. It's just having a little bit more patience, kindness and calmness with yourself. And some people call it lazy. I call it intelligent preparation for summer. No, I just made that up. I'm just calling it lazy. So, I'm all for the hibernation, of what's going on. Although seeing everybody in Greece and Italy and Croatia and Mykonos, it's like a little bit upsetting. I can't lie, but, it is what it is. It is what it is. Yeah. Okay, so look, I know you've been writing some incredible articles. You're doing quite a lot of work as far as research is concerned. Do you want to share with us one or two article topics? Because I really love them when you were telling me offline. And then we can get on stuck in with today's topic.
Yeah, so there are three ones coming out. The one has actually been published already, but I haven't started sharing it yet. It's called The Resilience Trap. And like just a very short sort of intro to that is like, Danica was reading something to me around like someone saying South Africa is such a resilient nation. And I just thought again, resilience isn't the point. Like, so what if you're resilient? If you are always just a punching bag, like a punching bag is resilient, right? But do you always want to be the punching bag? So it kind of goes into this idea that we can get caught in the trap of resilience.
So we're always the fighter. Like we'll keep going because we're resilient. Oh my God, you're so right, eh?
And then,
that is a terrible idea.
Terrible idea. And then the second one is that's coming out. It's called the high performance vacuum. And this is something that I just saw in so many of the high performers that I was working with in a one-to-one coaching situation. And what it is that as a high performer, you get stuck in a rut. And that rut produces a high performance output. Why? Because you're a high performer, so you have high performance habits. So I look at you from the outside, I go, wow, like you are so phenomenal. But actually, when you take a bit of a closer look, you realize that even though you have a high performance output, meaning, excitement, and challenge has all been sucked out of your life. And so it creates this vacuum. And so I'm exploring those ideas.
Do you think you are in a vacuum? Definitely sounds like I feel like sometimes I'm in a vacuum, but what do you do then?
It's part of survival mode, right? Like you get into that state where you are reactive every day, that you're operating from frustration, anxiety, fear. So that's exactly that's kind of the high performance vacuum is part of how you end up getting into survival mode. And I think the first step is just recognizing it, that you wake up in the mornings bored and without challenge and – yeah.
But hang on. Do you think that high performance in a vacuum is driven by anxiousness and high performance driven by excitement is a totally different thing? Do you think it's the underlying reasoning why you're a high performer? You're doing it for the wrong reasons? How would that look?
Yeah, it could be that. I do think there's a difference. I mean, you always speak about running away from the dark versus running towards the light. So I do think there's a difference there. But I think the biggest thing that I'm trying to highlight for people here is that if you simply judge someone by their output, it doesn't mean that they actually wake up in the morning feeling good about themselves.
Yeah, true.
And that's the thing that we need to pay attention to. Like, what's the point of just having high performance output if nothing else in your life feels like it fulfills you?
Well, look, I think I talk about that a lot, and I call it the difference between accomplishment and purpose. It's like we're driving this accomplishment. And what I always find a bit funny is when somebody says that person's successful And when they are describing success, it means they have money and nothing else. It's almost like we have this king. You know, they say king is cash. Cash is king. Cash is king. Yeah, but we've got this king. Look, think about the language we're even using. It's like, if you got cash, you're successful. The fact that you're a drug addict and you're having an affair and you're sick, you're about to die, it doesn't mean anything. It's fine. As long as you've got the Ferrari, you're winning. And it's this, it's a broken. Well, look, this is exactly what my new book is about. It's reimagining the possibility of a new socioeconomic system that doesn't prioritize this hoarding of money. And, you know, we can speak about it and we still suffer from it. You know, Eric, I mean, you and I are always like, okay, how much did you make here? How much you make there? But the truth is that when you're driving that, only that, and I think that's what you and I have, you know, we've developed our passion and we've really understood why we're here. And so money's a nice byproduct, but we still give it focus. But I think people that are just driving the thing around money, I mean, it's just a horrible, horrible place, because when you make $1 million, guess what you want? A $2 million. And then when you have $3 million, I mean, it's a nonstop process. And so, yeah, we must become more aware and conscious about what success looks like. I like that.
I think it comes back to so much of what you've spoken about with also our relationship with money and actually working on that and actually seeing that as an important thing that needs some deep work. Because as much as we say that we exalt money, there are also so many people who demonize it. And like, and guess where that gets you?
Yeah, of course. And I think it's just that religious notion or cultural notion that says, you know, don't talk about it. It's just a byproduct of everything you do. Yes. But give it some attention and some focus, a container, an intention, a cadence. I'm actually, I've started a new 2-day masterclass called Your Money in Motion. And so we'll start that in end of October. So nice. I'll be doing people 2 hours, 1 hour a day, just talking about the intention, the energy that is, or that's necessary around money, you know, and we know you and I meditate heavily on this. Your money in motion. Really good. Thank you.
You know, there's for sure, like, since we've become friends, that speaking about money has become much easier for you. Well, that too.
Yeah, you're richer. But, that's good. That's a good thing. It's a good thing.
But,
yeah.
But it's become a much easier topic for me to speak about. And but also not in general, like with you. Like I'm very comfortable for us to have those conversations. Not necessarily like across the board though.
Look, I think still culturally and in society, it's a weird thing to talk about. And it's funny, you know, it's like sex. It's like everybody's having sex, but nobody talks about it. It's like, don't talk about it. It's not supposed to be spoken. Why isn't it supposed to be spoken about? Like, it's like farting, right? Everybody farts, but don't get caught farting. I mean, we're joking. Everybody farts. Why is it such an issue? Yes, it's like burping, right? Everybody burps, but like, imagine sneezing was rude. Imagine. Like, you couldn't sneeze in front of somebody. I mean, that's just society's made sneezing okay, but burping not. But then when you're in Saudi, apparently in Saudi Arabia, when you burp, it's a sign that you've really enjoyed your meal.
Yeah.
So I think it's a cultural nuance, having this conservative idea around money and sexuality and power. And I think when you bring it to the surface and start talking about it, you can start having an engaging relationship with it rather than it just being this dark secret thing that you have on the side there, like you're having a mistress when it comes to money, you know? So I don't think it should be like that at all, you know? So yeah, I'm glad you're richer.
Yeah. And thank you. I'm glad you're richer as well.
Thank you. I hope all our listeners are richer. And if they want to become richer, they must do Money in Motion Masterclass coming up. So, okay. So what's the third topic around your angle there? The article?
The third one that I'm writing is capacity for chaos. And
yes, nice topic.
Yeah. It's, you know, the central hypothesis for this one is that ultimately, I think the people who achieve the most are the ones who are most comfortable with chaos. And, you know, we wake up in the morning and there are fires burning around us. And some of us become really anxious about putting out as many of these fires as possible. And what we actually want is no fires, you know. But the reality is there are always going to be fires. And so actually, the more you can just be okay with sitting in the heat, the better. And we need to develop that capacity then for chaos. Because I think like Elon Musk, can you imagine like the intense anxiety that he must feel for everything that's happening in his life? But because he can hold that capacity for chaos, he's able to send people to Mars. And so stop trying to put out the fires, just develop your capacity to sit in the fire. That's really what it comes down to.
Yeah, I like that. I mean, sorry, carry on.
No. I'm just saying I'm writing all of these mainly for myself. And I hope other people benefit from it too.
Mm. Yeah, sure. You know, I think it's always the development of your understanding of something. I mean, it's a great saying. It says if you want to learn something, read about it. You want to understand something, write about it. Mm. And if you want to master something, teach it. Mm. And it's this combination of practicing, teaching. I mean, it's just a great practice. I love what you're saying. I mean, I think what you've described there for me is very much this idea around patterns. And, you know, I said this to you, I think offline, it's like, you know, if you think about what's happened to us as a society and humanity, we are squarely in a winter when it comes to major cycles around the world. And I'm not talking about Southern Hemisphere, Northern Hemisphere. I'm talking about in a society, humanity kind of way. And the last time we had a winter was World War II. And then we had spring that came out with the IMF and the UN and all these sort of things with a new structure. And what I'm saying in my talks is like, if you know it's winter, what do? You dress warmly. That's just kind of like simple logic, right? Mm. So if there's going to be constantly burning fires out there, what do? You learn the capacity to become fireproof. Not, oh my God, it's a fire again. Yes, that's fine. And that's what it is. It's like getting up and saying, well, when are we harvesting? When it's actually a time to toil the soil. Mm. And so I love what you're saying. It's just, it's understanding the context of where you are so that you perform better. And, you know, it's almost like if you take it down to a very basic thing, like people are hiking. Often I hike and I hear people complaining while they're hiking. I'm like, what are you complaining about? You came on the hike. What, were you expecting it to be a downhill run? I mean, it's a hike. Stop complaining. You chose to come in. That's, you know, it's the same thing. So I love it. I love the context that you're giving things.
I want to read you a quick excerpt from the one, because actually when I wrote the resilience piece, it kind of gave birth to the capacity for chaos piece. And I just want to read you like my favorite line from it. Let me just quickly find it here. I didn't have it prepared. Give me 2 seconds.
Would you like me to sing and entertain our guests?
Just fill the space.
The very first time. hurry up. I don't know the words.
I'm looking.
I saw your brown eyes.
Here we go.
Oh, thank goodness. Okay.
So along the way, we get sold the idea that life is linear, a series of steps or progressions, that there is some order to how things should happen. We now know that this is a lie. Life is non-linear at best. Resilience then starts feeling like an attempt to take the non-linearity of the world and to drag it back onto the template of linearity and predictability that we have been told to expect. What do you think about that?
Mic drop. But look, it's funny, you know, I think you and I speak many times about similar things with different language.
Mm.
And so what you're talking about here is I speak about respond, recover, reimagine, how resilience must be both in responding and recovering and reimagining. And I think that most people are doing exactly what you spoke about there, is about trying to bring some level of certainty and being resilient in that certainty, whereas actually that's the worst thing you could do. I think we spoke about this in one of our podcasts, actually. So I love it. I mean,
I'm not sure if we've done a resilience podcast, because we've been speaking about it in the context of YPO.
Yes,
background.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yes, that's right. So yes, I agree with you. You know, it's like, it's really important for us to reimagine and be resilient in the reimagining. And, you know, I think as South African citizens, we often called resilient. And I don't know if that's such a good thing. It's like,
it's not.
You know, why don't we have more? It's not.
No.
Because I think resilience in this idea. Yeah. Carry on.
No. Go for it.
No, I think this idea that has been driven down our throat that, yes, push, and you'll make it, push. No, the thing is, create a container and flow.
Mm.
Like, why would you want to, like, push? Like, just, like, wait and create the environment. Look, there's a great saying that says, it's a guy who wrote a fantastic book about culture, and I'm sure you know it. He's a French guy. He says, when a plant is not growing well, you don't change the plant, you change the environment.
Mm.
And it's the same thing, is that, you know, what we're doing is like, no, resilience is all focused on the wrong spot, you know? So well done. I like that article. When's it going to come out?
The resilience one is out already. I just need to start sharing it. And then the rest are all in draft. There's actually another one that I'm writing called the performance perception gap. But we'll get into that another day. You know, the one thing I think that's problematic about resilience, especially if you think about it in the context of South Africa, in my opinion here, is that one of the preconditions that we often need to change is catastrophe. Like, you need to be broken up with for you to start going to the gym. You need to hit rock bottom before you start managing your finances better or getting yourself out there. And I think often, like, resilience could keep you from that pivotal moment where things kind of break down and you're like, okay, now we need change. And I think we've been seeing it in many parts around the world, catastrophe, right? But if we are resilient, then we're always just kind of bouncing back, and it never reaches that inflection point where things are just bad enough that we can actually change.
I love that. You know, let me tell you, when I went bankrupt, when I was 30 years old, and I remember the slow motion of my bank account emptying out month by month while I was propping up one of my businesses. I had a few businesses, but one of them was eating me alive, and I was trying to prop it up. And every month I was resilient in keeping it in the old way, hoping it would change somehow. I don't know what I was doing, but I was so stuck in survival mode. I couldn't see it. And my bank account every month just dropped and dropped. And after 18 months, I turned around, there was no money in there. And I couldn't keep propping up this business. And I remember that it was over load shedding time in South Africa, you know, when there was no electricity around for our international listeners. Listen, there's load shedding all around the world. You know that. All around the world, there's load shedding. We think it's a South African thing. There's actually load shedding in many, many parts of the world that we were surprised. Yeah, many places. Anyway, and so I remember the night where I really needed some cash flow to pay salaries. It was a Friday night, and the restaurant was fully booked. And I remember arriving, and everything was set up, and we're ready to go, and we're fully booked. And I really needed to pay salaries because I just had no more money left. So I was prioritizing salaries, not rent. And it was 7 o'clock. And the bookings were starting to arrive, and load shedding happened. And all of that night's trade was gone. So my last hope of resilience was gone in front of my eyes. I remember driving home and screaming on the top of my voice in my very fancy car that was about to get taken away from the bank. And I punched the windscreen. Thank goodness it didn't crack, because I would have then owed even more money. But I punched the windscreen. I got home and I was beside myself. I was crying. I was in a catastrophe. And I phoned my mom and I just said, I just can't do this anymore. I just don't even know which way I can turn. And she said, look, I think it's time for you to think about bankruptcy, because, you know, every successful business, not every, but many successful businesses, men have that, you know. And I used to always poo-poo people who declared bankruptcy. Richard Branson, come on, man. Why did you have to declare bankruptcy? And that night I decided, and that night was the first night I slept well in 8 months. And the next morning I came and gave the keys to a sequestration lawyer. And you're right. You know, the catastrophe, my resilience in trying to keep the old going was I tell you, I didn't sleep. I didn't sleep for months and months and months, because I just couldn't, you know. So I love what you're saying. And look, another one that happened to me was my divorce. When I got divorced, I was 40 years old, and I realized that I'd been a boy my whole life. And again, that catastrophe of losing my future memories with this woman that I loved shattered my reality in such a way that it got me to pick up and start writing and start diving into what I'm doing now. So yeah, catastrophe is such a great catalyst. Do you have any catastrophe stories?
Yeah, I have breakup stories. And I definitely have like tough month stories, like, you know, from when I pivoted from physio into coaching. There were months where I had to load my credit card to get through it. Like, I haven't had not necessarily in finance, I have like the rock bottom moment, but I've been very close to like maxed out credit cards and came from the edge.
So, do you know what that's called? That's called the American dream. Yeah. The American dream is, how can you max your credit cards out to live the American dream? Yeah.
Yeah. So I've had that for sure. I think that's one of the big problems with the resilience thing is that.
Yeah.
Like, when do things change if you're always just going to bounce back? But yeah. I think, listen, I actually don't want to carry on with that, because I think the stories and the examples you gave, are really impactful. And I think, you know, I'd like to leave the listeners on that note, to be honest.
Well, look, I want to say one thing is that this level of resilience that's required in the world today is very much about reinvention. And what we have to do is become okay with the exhausted fatigue that comes from reinventing yourself. And don't think for a second it's not easy. I mean, it's not hard. It is incredibly hard. Now, Eric was on my first Future Preparedness Masterclass. And it was the first time I had to operate Zoom with a presentation and the mic. And I remember that day I couldn't hear anybody because somehow Zoom had done an upgrade. And I was running this masterclass. I'd never run anything like it before. I didn't even know where the breakout rooms were. And I felt depressed. I mean, you checked on me a few times later and I couldn't even respond to you. I was so embarrassed. But you know, that fatigue, that emotional strain that you take when you're not as good as you wish you were. And it was that, it's that great, like, cliched Instagram post that says, when's the last time you did something for the first time?
Mm.
And it's exactly where we are right now. So when you are thinking resilience, it's not bad. Mm. Just resilience and reinvention. Mm. Resilience in trying new things and being okay with being crap at something, you know?
Mm.
It's especially for you and I, you don't want to be seen as crap. And also, we do things live, right? So you're being interviewed or you're doing a talk. You can't be like, oh, oopsie.
Yeah.
That's just a bit of an oopsie there. Like, no, no, no. YPO New York's not like, oh, no, don't worry. That's fine. Yeah. We're going to pay you top dollar. You can make mistakes. No, no. So I think resilience is really about making a 100% commitment to reinvention. And if you make a 98% commitment to reinvention, guess what? You haven't made any commitment at all, actually. So it's got to be 100%. And I think you and I have been practicing this since lockdown, and the results speak for themselves because you're so rich now. And you know, that's just what's happened. Thanks to your pivot and thanks to your resilience and reinvention.
Yeah, thank you. Keep saying it.
Cool.
Keep saying it.
Keep saying it. You're rich. I'm rich. All our listeners are rich. All of you are rich.
Friends, because we affirm each other all the time. You know, I don't need to do my own affirmations. You do them for me. So it's amazing.
So how are you feeling today, Eric? Let me phone John. Let him tell me how I'm feeling today. Okay. Well, look, guys, if anybody wants to share this podcast with anybody, please go ahead and do it. We have such a great time doing it. We often are surprised by how many people listen to this podcast. We are constantly reminded that people enjoy it. So thank you so, so much. It's just unbelievable to us, you know? So thank you so much. Please share this with somebody if you think they can listen to it. Please make a comment. Give us 7 stars if you can. Good luck with doing that out of 5. So Eric, anything from you?
Yeah, no, thank you. I think it's always a pleasure to jump on this call with you and to have our weekly catch up in the podcast form and to join thousands of listeners around the world. So thank you.
Thank you. Peace out.